How about like pranking an animal? You put like a couple kittens in a doghouse and you let a dog go inside his doghouse. And that way, all three animals get pranked.
Why even do it? I mean, it's like it's borderline animal cruelty. What, pranking a dog? A pranking animal?
You sure. Could punch an elephant.
Sure.
Done. I'd punch an elephant.
You cannot prank an animal. Animals don't know they're being pranked.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to a special Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. Why are you hearing the comforting sounds of Lobo on this Wednesday afternoon? That's because today, tomorrow, and Friday, we are going to be bringing you some special shows to all the pets we've loved before. We did this summer where we talked about old cars that we'd had in the past. And as I'm going to be traveling to Chicago this week, and Andrew is traveling to the Cleve, our schedule for recording was going to be a little funky. We decided, well, we'll put some special programming together, and we'll offer it up to all of you. So that's the plan. Let's welcome that co-brogan of the show that I just mentioned. Let's see. This will be airing on Wednesday. You're still actually going to be... You'll still be in Seattle on Wednesday, but then what is it, Thursday you're heading to the Cleve, my friend?
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, as this show is airing, I am probably helping some appliance, I guess, workers install a new refrigerator and freezer in my apartment. That's big news here in the Walsh household. New refrigerator and freezer is showing up on Wednesday, and so I will be installing that with them. When I say installing that, I mean standing around trying to make small talk like you do when there are strangers in your house.
Yeah, like how involved do you think you have to get in the process of lifting the thing and moving the thing? I assume you'll leave that to the professionals?
Well, I mean, it's a question of how involved do I have to get and how involved will I get, right? And right. I tend to, because I do think there are the type of people who probably get a little bit too involved or nosy or budinsky, as my family would say. Did you use that phrase growing up, by the way? Don't be a budinsky?
No, but I heard it in my early 20s and always really disliked it. So thanks for bringing that up.
Sure, no problem.
Early on a Wednesday edition of the show.
But I tend to give people their space, but I will need to make sure that they are not kind of ruining the floors. I had been messing around. Our current refrigerator is kind of having some issues, so I had pulled it away from the wall a few times to defrost it, and I was kind of ruining the floor. So it is my mission to make sure that these folks can install my refrigerator without ruining the floor.
I see. So it's really out of self-protection or protection of the house more so than feeling bad like you're not being helpful. Because I've gotten to the point now where and this probably makes me a terrible person. When we hire someone to do something or when there's a delivery happening or like – we had the front lawn reseeded recently. I just hide. I mean, other than like giving the folks who need access to whatever they're doing, I just pretty much hide from them because I feel like they don't want to be bothered. And also, and this is the part that doesn't reflect well on me, I feel like I'm paying in some way for this service. Let me give you an example. We have a swimming pool here, and there's a cover that gets put on the swimming pool. It's there now for the winter months. It's a nightmare to deal with. And we had been, we've hired this local company that comes out and they kind of winterize the swimming pool and then they put the cover on. But somehow Carrie had gotten roped into like helping the guy put the cover on every year because it's kind of a hassle. And this year I told Carrie, I was like, this was like a weird thing to say, but I was like, you should just go do an errand when it's time to put the cover on because if it needs two people, then they need to send two people to do it. Like, this is, again, this is so bad of me, but I'm like, or maybe I'm just feeling more confident, like you telling people at a work lunch you don't want weird cheese on your pizza. I'm just like, if we're paying for a service, I now am fine with the people who are getting paid to do the service doing the service. And I don't really want to get roped into it because if I wanted to do it myself, I would be saving the money on paying for it to be done.
Yeah. I think that a situation like that is very dependent on, I don't know, the type of help you're hiring. In other words, if it's like the guy or the kid down the street and they need, and they're, you're giving them kind of a little bit of money, but it's more of kind of a neighborly
under the
thing
table.
And it's under the table. And, you know, especially if it's a young person, you want to help them out. And, you know, like, yeah, I could sort of see that. But if you're hiring a professional company with business cards and a sign and a name and everything else that goes along with being a local business and you're paying them decent money. And I think you've said before, I know you said the cover itself to replace it is very expensive. I don't know how much it costs to have it installed. But if you're really paying them, then yeah, I don't think you should have to help. Or at least it shouldn't be standard practice.
Right. And Carrie this year, when it was time, I think I was out of town, but when it was time for the cover to be put on, she did actually legitimately have somewhere she had to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when she showed up, everything was handled. The cover was on there. Who knows what happened? Maybe Rudy helped.
Mm-hmm, probably.
But It was handled, and I was like, that's good. That's how that should work.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my younger days, I was so not used to just having the resources I was so not used to having people come do things that I always felt like, well, I should still kind of help out. And then at some point, I just turned into a bitter, entitled person who was like, no one make eye contact with me when you're here working on the estate.
Well, I think I'm already the one who referred to human beings as help a moment ago. So, but I got to say, the we also had issues. You know, we moved into this apartment, as you know, like, what, eight months ago or something now. But the person who lived here before us had lived here for a very, very long time. So by the time we moved in, I think they, you know, kind of did a rehaul of the place, repainted everything. But the appliances were pretty old and pretty shoddy, as we're learning now. So they've already had to replace our washing machine, which was pretty much just broken when we moved in. And they're really good about this stuff, by the way. Our landlords, I'll just give a little shout out. But the guy who delivered the new dishwasher, did I say washing machine all this time or dishwasher?
You did.
I've been saying washing machine. I've meant dishwasher. My apologies.
Well, by the way, I mean, you can't use the same. It's not like you can't use the same one for both things. So maybe you're washing your clothes in the dishwasher, Amelia Bedelia. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know your life.
It is true. While a washing machine is not a dishwasher is a washing machine.
Potentially.
It is a machine that washes things.
And you could conceivably wash your – you can't wash your dishes in the washing machine because they'd get broken.
Mm-hmm.
But you could conceivably wash at least some of your clothes in the dishwasher.
What would it be like if you came over, you know, we did a show together, you have your coffee cup and you want to be polite, so you open up the dishwasher to put it in the rack and you just see, like, my skivvies. It's just like, just all of my underwear is just
I would be really worried for you, like, immediately. Like, I'd be either there's a mental health issue that I don't know about. Like, that would stop me in my tracks.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would be like, or either there's a mental health issue or there's a financial issue that I don't know about.
Right.
Like, that would indicate to me, it would be as if I went into your, like, your room where you you play video games and stuff, kind of your private sanctum / the guest room now.
Mm-hmm.
It would be as like if I opened that up and there was just, like, pictures and maps and strings connecting things, kind of that famous, like, conspiratorial motif or whatever you call it, tableau. It would be like if I opened that room, I opened that door and it was just like that in there. I'd be like, okay, I need to, first of all, get out of this place, get out of this apartment. And then I want to be a safe distance from you at that point, but I want to also make sure you're getting the help you need. I would quietly close the dishwasher. I wouldn't say anything about it. I would make up an excuse about going to the car to get something and I would immediately scram.
And then, though, how soon before you start thinking, well, the good news is we have plenty to talk about on Monday's TBTL. I did want to say, though, when this fella is delivering my dishwasher. About 2-3 months ago, he, you know, we're friendly, we're talking. I think I maybe did help him a little bit, just kind of navigate through our apartment. I didn't want him rolling his dolly over our nice carpet, so I was kind of like making a trail for him. Anyway, at some point, he's so familiar with me that he starts telling me about his divorce that he's like going through in the moment. And like, it started by just talking about traffic and what his commute is or how many days a week he works. And then it starts to get into, well, I'm on, I don't know, he's living on some one of the islands around here. And then you got to wait for the ferry. And I'm out there. I'm living with my parents. He was living with his parents or his mom, I think. And he's going through this divorce. And things got a little bit too close to real for me. And so we kind of wrap that job up. And I said, good day, sir. I didn't want to be rude to him, but like I didn't want to be going down that path.
That's a tough one because when people are oversharing like that, it's because they are hurting and they kind of are looking to make a connection with someone. There's clearly something they want to get off their chest.
Yeah.
So you feel bad for them. But it's like that's one of the worst case scenarios for me when I'm dealing with somebody, be it a Lyft driver or someone who's delivering something to my house or just somebody who I just really want to keep things cash. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of like, they take it to somewhere really real because what I don't have is the ability to just kind of go, well, that must be terrible, and then move on. Then I get into trying to diagnose the problem for them and help them, which I don't really want to be doing, but I don't really know how to respond to that kind of when they give you a bunch of really real information.
And this is supposed to be a special episode all about pets, and I'm going to take it just one click realer here. But also, I get a little bit nervous talking to men who are going through a divorce, especially depending on how fresh it is. Because you just – even some probably very good men, just this is the moment where they start to really lean towards men's rights. And some – not all the time, but a little – like I was – I cannot go into detail here because who knows who's listening to this. But I do have a friend from a really long time ago who I haven't talked to in a really, really long time. And I noticed via social media that it looked like he might be going through something. And so we caught up by phone, probably talked for the first time in 15 years recently. And, you know, sadly, we were talking because he is going through a hard time and he's going through a divorce of somebody who I know that they'd been together for as long as I knew them, a really, really long time. And that's tough. But, you know, the conversation does become, you know, well, you know, I'm talking to my therapist or I'm talking to my lawyer and women often do this and women often do this. And it's a classic thing of women doing this. I'm just like, he didn't say anything that was like a total alarm bell, but I was just like, it definitely kind of put me in a little bit of uncomfortable zone, just like kind of like talking about the patterns of women who are, you know, getting to a point where they, whatever, it becomes slightly predatory or whatever theories are out there. And I'm just kind of like, I want to be here for you because you need somebody to talk to. And it's a really tough thing. And you have your own defense mechanisms and they're manifesting themselves in this way. But I don't love the things you're saying either. You know what I mean?
Well, it's actually it's a good entree into what we're going to talk about next because I used to have a ferret who spent so much money on divorce lawyers for men. Right. So it can actually tie together.
Up. Yeah, no, that was all purposeful.
All of these things. No, I know what you mean. Like that can get really uncomfortable. I told this story on the show at some point, but when I was in Austin. And this is not men's rights, but it's just that like that moment where somebody that you're dealing with through a service relationship where they start to go somewhere and you don't want to go there with them, but you're the customer. So really, technically, you could just be like, stop talking now.
Yeah.
But you don't want to make it weird. Was we were me and some of the Livewire crew and Kurt Anderson from that show Studio 360. We were taking a Lyft to go to get some food. During the PRPD, and we get in this lift, and for whatever reason, the guy launches into a whole basically reverse racism is real thing.
Right.
And all of us were just like, oh, what do we do? And what I did, which actually I was kind of proud of, was I just got him talking about rideshare laws in the city of Austin, which luckily just – I pivoted him to his other most mm-hmm. passionate topic.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was thinking about later, and I know this is not the same as you and your friend because – you have a different relationship with your friend. But I kind of was like, you know, essentially I'm paying this person or whoever is paying, you know, I guess Livewire Radio ultimately is paying this person to drive us to a place. So if I don't really agree with him about reverse racism, this white guy, it would be appropriate for me to say that I find that offensive what you're saying. Please mm-hmm. stop talking for the remainder of this ride.
Mm-hmm.
But like in a million years, I would never do that.
Right.
Like, or like the time, or like when you're getting your hair cut or something. Like a time when like a service is being provided to you, and it wouldn't be like completely wildly inappropriate for you to say, what you're doing right now is lowering my enjoyment of this service you're providing me, so please cease and desist. But like I would rather die than ever do that.
When I was living in Koreatown, for all of the times that I've taken ride shares, whether they're Ubers or Lyfts, like I can count on, I guess, like one finger or certainly one hand the times that I've been uncomfortable. But one of those times was driving through Koreatown to my apartment in Koreatown, and my Uber driver starts telling me, telling me some of the issues he has with Koreans, or I can't even remember what it was, but like, you know, kind of saying things about Koreans taking over the neighborhood or whatever, and not like celebrating it. And I'm just like, are you shitting me? I live here,
did
man.
Did you say, are you shitting me?
No, and you, I regret like, not. I think I just shut up. I think I stopped responding, and I'm just like, I'm going to, you know, I was pretty close. It wasn't a long drive anyway. And, but I probably should be more comfortable. Boy, this is not a show about pets. But I should be more comfortable challenging people probably sometimes and saying, you know, that's not appropriate. I did when I gave them 0 stars or 1 star and put something in the report, like did not appreciate the commentary on Korean Americans or something. So I did see something and say something, but I probably could have said something to his face like, that's not cool, man.
Just to make this another sort of subtle promo for a different podcast, when I was listening to that Armchair Expert show that I've been enjoying, they were talking about, I forget, they were paraphrasing somebody else, but what they were saying, it was Dax Shepard or Kristen Bell, was saying that they had heard someone say that when you're delivering news to someone or you're having a conversation with someone where you're basically, I guess you could say, when you're giving someone feedback that they're probably not going to enjoy for one reason or another, either you're just being honest with them or you're telling them something that's awkward, it's about 8 seconds of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know who times this. I don't know if that's a real number, but it kind of sounded plausible to me. Like it's 8 seconds of discomfort. So if you would have said to that Lyft driver, hey man, I don't really feel the same way, and honestly, I find it a little off-putting or offensive that's what you're saying to me right now, considering that this is a kind of a customer service relationship. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. I mean, I guess you don't know what someone's reaction could be. Maybe his defense mechanism will be to become more belligerent. But I think for me, I'm going to try to think about that in a lot of situations where it's like there's a thing I want to say, but I don't say it because I don't want it to be more weird, or I don't want the other person to think negatively about me. But something about thinking of it as about 8 seconds of discomfort makes it less scary to me.
Yeah, especially if it's a stranger that you never have to, you know, see again, certainly. I think things get a little bit more complicated if it's family or close friends. Or
I have the opposite response, really? Because to family and close friends, I feel like I've got the rest of my life to iron this out.
That's true, actually. But if you're responsible about it, yeah, and if you kind of choose your words carefully and in the moment and don't react with anger, but say, you know, I don't know, Aunt Susan, like, that's not exactly the most enlightened way to look at that. I mean, if you can find a way to do it that it doesn't create actual discord in the relationship.
I have to say, I hope that, we're not going closer to pet talk. We're going further.
What
from
is
pet talk.
Happening?
Or is it farther?
What is happening?
What's happening is the cold medicine finally wore off.
And
somehow I'm
real.
Less good at hosting the show. What's that about? For those who listened to yesterday's edition of the show, I was high as a kite at the beginning, and I'm happy to say my brain is defogged, but I was really proud of Addie, of my daughter, because she was telling me, she was recounting something to me, and I think she'd be okay with me mentioning this, as long as I'm a bit vague about the details. Like everybody, she has people in her extended family who are not politically aligned with where she's at, and are the kind of folks, these are, you know, older people, I guess you could say, who are more easily tricked into reposting things on Facebook that are factually extremely questionable.
Mm-hmm.
And this was during the Kavanaugh thing. And Addie was telling me and Carrie a story of how this person in her life who's, again, someone that she loves and cares about, but somebody who's an extended family member. They had posted something. This is a female person. They'd posted something that was sort of doubtful of Kavanaugh's accuser. And she didn't – Addie just was trying to figure out, how do I deal with this? And she didn't like shame the – she didn't start fighting with the person in the comment section. And she actually just put together a really thoughtful message that she like direct messaged or whatever you do on Facebook, kind of just wondering like, I wonder why you – she asked it in a way I was really impressed by. It wasn't saying you're wrong. It was saying, hey, I just wanted to follow up on this. I'm curious why this was something that you thought might be true or something. It was more like not yelling at the person, but just kind of going like, you know, let's talk about this a little bit. Or like, I'm wondering why it is that this was your response to this issue. And then they had a conversation. And then the person said some things that were factually questionable, as you might imagine. Well, a lot of people know this or that. And then she just kind of said, well, one of the things, this is Addie now, she goes, you know, one thing that it's worth thinking about is, where is this information coming from that you're getting? And some of the, you know, not everything on the internet is equally believable. And this is a list of some places that, and she, I think she even linked to a Pew study or something. This is my daughter, by the way, my 24-year-old daughter, who's better at handling this shit than I am now.
Yeah.
She was like, she linked to some kind of a sort of nonpartisan study about like what are the most believable places to get information, and said, hey, you know, you might want to also check this out. This is a list of kind of like of places we can get information that are seen to be like the at least trying to be the most accurate. And I don't know how it was resolved. I don't think that other person had their mind totally changed. But I was thinking about it, and of course, a lot of this is just tied up in me being the father of this child. I was like, that's a good way to handle that.
Yeah, it is. That's, you know, really responsible.
I either just like flame someone, or I just go completely radio silent. And those are both also not good responses.
I just think I know I said this before in a weird long tangent that I'm still embarrassed by, because I don't think I've made my point right. Although a lot of nice people wrote to me and said that you get what I'm saying. But like, it's just stories like that that make me really believe that I just feel so good about Addie's generation, the young adults in the world right now, and the people who are like kind of coming into young adulthood and are, you know, maybe coming out of college, or just that general generation. I just feel like, and I loved growing up in the 90s, and I love certain – I was talking with Genevieve about this recently, and I don't remember exactly why it came up, but how, you know, our generation is just the defining characteristic of it was kind of cynicism and eye-rolling and sarcasm and all of the things that we think of Generation X. And, you know, part of me still kind of likes that, but I feel so much better about – I just feel like the young adults who are kind of going to be taking over just feel like they're so much better grounded. I don't know. I don't have kids. I'm not around them that much. Maybe it's an idealized thing, but I really like that story that you told, and I'm not trying to say that every single person Addie's age is, you know, as well equipped or as articulate and thoughtful in their approach to things, but I get a good feeling.
I think that, you know, millennials are much maligned. I think that's probably been the case. Every generation has probably thought that the next generation was just like, because the whatever the next generation is, their way of speaking and their way of moving through the world is going to be different, obviously, than the generation that preceded them. So it will seem odd and silly and pointless, or not pointless, but like, you know, there's just so much shit is talked about millennials.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I certainly don't think they deserve it, but I also think that you know, as they say, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. I think the arc of humankind is long, but I think it bends towards progressiveness. And I think that, you know, younger people I think that they have, because they've grown up at a different time than we have. One thing is, generally speaking, I think that they're more aware of what their wants and needs are.
Mm.
And so I think that comes off as thinking the world revolves around them. But I think that what also comes with that is being more aware of what other people's wants and needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, you know, the stuff that goes on online where it's like, oh, political correctness, or you can't say anything now, or there's all these – everyone's mad at everyone over stuff. I think what it is it's just people being way more cognizant of how stuff is affecting other people. And granted, there are some growing pains and – this is new territory. Now I'm just all over the map with this, but you know, the question about safe spaces, or like if students at a college have the right to like have a course taught where there's never a reference to something that might be a trigger, you know, there's a lot of ways you can look at the millennials and you can kind of think they're not ready for prime time. But I have to say, honestly, if you just adjust your view, if I adjust my view to realize that they have a different way of talking, they have a different way of communicating with each other. But the good news is they're, if you just like read data on them, they're much more accepting of other people. They're much more inclusive. You know, I think they're going to be just fine. And I think that the generation after them will be even more fine. And what's funny is the millennials will grow up and they'll think the generation after them has no chance.
Yeah.
And that generation will probably be overall more emotionally evolved and attuned to things.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I feel like every generation has a tendency to look down at the younger generation, and then our generation especially was such a sarcastic generation that I think it's kind of a, it's almost like a perfect storm of sneeriness, you know?
Possible show title, not pet related. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, then we're going to come back, we're going to bump in with a pet-themed song, and we're going to reset our brains, and we're talking about some pets that we've had. And that is the plan here on episode 2756 in a collector series. So stay with us. It's TBTL. So we were going around and around on like what music should we play? How should we start these special shows? We're going to talk about pets, or maybe we're going to talk about millennials. I don't know. we could not find. We ended up with that Lobo song. But we could not settle on a song that was sort of pet related, and I had no idea. Maybe the listeners were more aware of this than I was, but I had no idea that this song, Martha, My Dear, was actually about Paul McCartney's old English sheepdog, which he adopted in 1965. Mm. But if you Google songs about pets, it's pretty much the top of the list.
I am looking at the lyrics now because so I went to you know, genius.com, which is one of my favorite websites.
Great job, and, genius.
And you know, they back up the claim, a song about Paul McCartney's sheepdog / muse, Martha. Here's a quote from Paul McCartney. She was a dear pet of mine. I remember John being amazed. Oh, by the way, that's John Lennon. By the way, they have it parenthetically. I remember John Lennon.
Thanks, genius. Should I keep making that joke? Yeah. Till it gets good.
Actually, that one was good. That was really appropriate.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
I remember John being amazed to see me being so loving to an animal. He said, I've never seen you like that before. I've since thought, you know, he wouldn't have. It's only when you're cuddling around with a dog that you're in that mode, and she was a very cuddly dog. Martha lived until 1981. She was survived by a litter of puppies, which McCartney still owns. One of them, in fact, appears on the cover of his album, Paul Is Live. Also, more detail. This is interesting. McCartney admitted that this song was his attempt at trying to emulate the kind of schizophrenic, complex songwriting Lennon displayed in Happiness is a Warm Gun. But the lyrics themselves, it's hard for me to mash them with a song about a dog. Hold your head up, you silly girl. Look what you've done. Well, when you find yourself in the thick of it, help yourself to a bit of what is all around you, silly girl. Take a good
look.
Sounds
like Martha. Yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You say it as I scan these.
The beginning part sounds like you come into the room. The dog has just like gotten into something. It's all, you know, the house is destroyed. I could see that. It sounds like a thing that you could sing about a dog.
Absolutely, yeah. I guess the one thing, the very first line, you know, Martha, my dear, though I spend my days in conversation, please remember me. I don't quite get that, but everything else here is good. At the end, you know, please be good to me, Martha, my love, don't forget me. You've always been my inspiration. That's a sweet thing. This makes me, I've known this song my entire life. It makes me appreciate it more.
The website I'm at, Mother Nature Network, says that it started as a piano exercise for Paul McCartney, which I could kind of hear that. Like he was, you know, just basically it was like his way to practice playing the piano. Also, that story, that completely jives with my notion of John Lennon versus Paul McCartney, right? I could see John, you know, Paul McCartney was the millennial generation and Paul John was the Gen X, like basically being like, it sounds like by Paul McCartney's description, John Lennon was shocked that you would have all this like strong emotion for an animal that couldn't really like talk back to you. And like, am I reading that right? What you said, what Genius was saying, that
it sounds surprising more
to
like
John Lennon.
It sounds more like John. It's not that John didn't appreciate the love of a dog. It was that John was seeing a side of Paul McCartney that he never saw before until Paul was around his dog. He's like, I never thought of you as a cuddly guy. And Paul's like, yeah, you don't see that side of people until they're around animals.
The other thing that they write on this website is that a lot of people had speculated that the song was about his longtime love interest, Jane Asher.
Mm.
But in 1977, Paul did an interview. He revealed it was his dog. And he says, whereas it would appear to anybody else to be a song to a girl named Martha, it's actually about a dog. And our relationship was platonic, believe me, said Paul McCartney.
Thanks, Mother Nature Monthly.
Doesn't work as well as
Genius.
No,
I don't even think I got
speaking
it right.
Speaking of pets, let's do this. Let's talk a little bit about some of our pets that we've had in our childhood, and the impact maybe they had on us, or I don't know, just whatever comes to mind. You and I grew up very, very differently on so many levels, but I'll just say that we grew up in a pretty small rental house in very much in the city of Seattle, teeny tiny backyard and lots of kids. So we didn't really have pets. And so I'm going to lean on you somewhat heavily because you grew up in the country pretty much and you had pets, but you said they were all, you've told me before the show, they were more like what? Animals? Were they working animals? Like, what was your relationship with pets as a kid?
I didn't have any working animals. They were all super lazy. When I think of pets right away, I think of, like, this cat, Alex. Maybe I'll tell you more about him later. And I got him, you know, when I was, like, about 13 years old, me and my dad went to the SPCA and picked him out. And maybe I can tell you about him later. But growing up, I feel like there were animals around, but our relationship with animals were they seemed often less traditionally pet-y. Now, we grew up in the country. It was not a farm. I think before I was born, I think my parents had a horse or two, but I never like interacted with that horse, maybe as a baby, but I didn't grow up with that kind of animal or livestock. We just had barn cats. And as a matter of fact, like we had the first pet I can think of is a cat that literally didn't have a name until I think I decided maybe around 10 years old. I was just like, I'm just going to call her Betsy. And then my sister made fun of me. She's like, why did you name a cat Betsy? We've had this cat. Like, it was just an outdoor cat that we loved and we petted. But it wasn't until I was like, you know, a kid, you know, thinking age. And I'm like, why does this cat not have a name? So I tried to retroactively name a cat Betsy, which I admit is a weird name for a cat.
I don't think that's that weird. I mean, thankfully, it's not. Like you didn't name it Whiskers or something. I mean,
right? Actually, Whiskers was her last name, Betsy Whiskers, but she was born with that. And then, like, we had a dog that I barely remember named Spike, and it was like it was funny that we had a dog named Spike. This was lost on me as a kid, but it was a tiny, sickly little white poodle, and it was. I just remember it always being really fragile. And I don't even remember that. Here's what I remember about the dog. The bedroom that I grew up in had this light old blue carpeting. I use those adjectives in the wrong. It was old carpeting, very kind of tramped upon, and it was light blue. And I remember there was a corner of the room where that light blue carpeting was yellowed and hard. And I remember my parents saying, yeah, that's where Spike had an accident. I think Spike was going around just having accidents all the time until eventually the first time I really had to confront death, actually, was my parents sitting me down and saying, you probably noticed I was very little. I wonder how much of this story I'm actually getting right. But I remember it was after dinner and my parents saying to us, you probably noticed that Spike hasn't been around. And all of a sudden I looked around and I was like, oh, yeah, Spike hasn't been around. Like, Spike wasn't my dog. I didn't interact with his dog. I was just a really little kid. And it was the family dog that was kind of unfun. And I was like, yeah, where is Spike? And they said, we had to put Spike down. Spike was really sick. I'm like, what do you mean you had to put him down? He died? They're like, well, we had to put him down. And it was the first time I understood that when pets are sick, you kind of have to kill them. You put them out of their misery. And I remember kind of being shocked at that a little bit, that my parents would kill the dog. And then they told me that the dog, Spike, was buried out by the barn, which seems weird to me. If you put an animal down, do they just give it to you to take back to your property and bury it? I'm not sure, but I do remember being creeped out around the barn for like years after, like wondering where the dog was buried.
The pet cemetery. Is there any chance your dad did it? Like,
because
you lived in the country. And, okay.
I don't think so. You know what? When I go home, I'll ask about that. But no, like, my family was not the type of family that would take an animal out back. And I don't honestly think my dad could even do that. I don't think he has the makeup to do that. I know I certainly don't. I'm sure they, you know, took Spike to a vet, and the vet was probably like, you know, the dog is on his last legs. I think it was a he. I don't even know. Like, anyway, I'll get more clarity on that.
I'm surprised you weren't more bonded to the dog, because maybe this just had to do with your age, but like, you've told the story of like playing Monopoly with your Andy dog that was a stuffed animal and listening to the Batman soundtrack, right?
Henry,
like,
yeah.
You kind of live far away from other people. You didn't have like a ton of friends. You seemed perfectly primed as a kid to have like a dog that was your best friend in the world that was not stuffed. I wonder why you didn't have that kind of relationship with an animal as a kid.
I think it had to do with age. Like, this is so fuzzy for me, and now I really do want to see if my family actually remembers this better than I do. Maybe my sister does, because she's 3 years older than me, and that could make the critical difference. I want to say,
Spike, even a dog? Is it possible Spike was an elderly relative that in your memory has turned into a shaky white poodle? There's like a great great aunt. Is it possible that they put her down? And is that even legal?
The chicken was a baby. Did you get that reference?
Dark.
Very dark.
Listen, I'm the one who did a family confronting their children's educational issues by way of the bird is the word voice. So I got nothing to – I'm in a big glass house on this one.
But I was young. I am thinking I wasn't even in kindergarten when my parents had the talk with me. So that puts me at 4 or maybe 5 years old. Okay. And I just don't think I was – you know, all that cognizant of what was going on. And again, wasn't a fun dog. It was just a sick little dog. And the name Spike, did I already say this, was kind of ironic. I learned later in life, because, you know, Spike is a classic name of a junkyard dog. And then we did end up getting, I'm just going to keep rolling here.
Do it.
I remember we got two cats that they felt like my first real pets, because, like, I don't think we picked them out. I think somebody, you know, in the, you know, down the street or somewhere had a litter, and my parents asked, you guys want some cats? And we said, yeah. So we had these two outdoor cats, and we named them Fred and Ethel after the neighbors on the I Love Lucy show.
I Love Lucy.
Yeah. And then I remember Ethel died. Ethel got hit by a car. Did I ever tell you this? This was a real mind F for me, because now I'm older. I'm probably like 11 or 12. And it was one of the things where I really had a bond with Fred, and Ethel was, you know, okay, but I really liked Fred. And then I think I even asked myself, well, if I had to choose one, I would choose Fred. And then when Ethel got hit by a car and died, I felt like I'd killed her. I felt like I had killed her with my mind.
By choosing Fred over
And then I thought it got weird, because then I was just a kid with a cat named Fred, which is just kind of funny. Oh, yeah, Andy's outside playing with Fred the cat, which is kind of – Fred and Ethel is cute as a couple name, but when it was just Fred, it got kind of weird. I remember Fred really missed her too. I remember Fred would just like cry and cry and cry for the few days after Ethel was gone, and that – that's a sad story, but it also makes me feel kind of happy that there's a real connection there. Because when we had our scare with our current cats recently, when both of them ran away, but then Professor Bananas came back, and we had her for a week before Theo came back. She loves on that cat so much. I thought it was going to be this great homecoming. Theo came back into the house, and Bananas was just hissing at him and didn't like the way he smelled anymore. And yeah, and I was like, that really bummed me out. I was like, your friend's back. Like, treat this cat with some respect. He's the prodigal son.
I think that there's maybe not all the time, but it's funny. I think that animals, for as much as we lavish animals with love and as much as we kind of think that we're their number one, maybe this is just the, what I call the circle of nagging in our family. But like, last night I was watching, I was downing a block of cheese and a bunch of not salty enough crackers and watching Eli Manning fail again. And the cat came and sat next to me. And Carrie's been working in Seattle lately, and so I've had a lot of just like being the home parent for the pets.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat is definitely like, Carrie has a better sense with the cat. Like, she grew up with cats. She knows how to like hold the cat and massage the cat in a way that the cat doesn't try to scratch her eyes out. She just she's just more comfortable around cats, and I'm still kind of learning. But since it's just been me, I feel like I'm upping my cat cuddle game.
Mm-hmm.
So the cat jumps up on the couch next to me last night, and I'm giving her kind of a massage, and she's sort of digging it, and Rudy is just like somewhere else in the house, and then Rudy comes into the TV room. She looks at me sort of annoyed because it's like the cat gets to hang out with us on the people side of the couch, and Rudy's not allowed up there. So Rudy gets an entire other side of the couch. So then she jumps up on that other side, and what is the first thing that happens? The cat is like, peace, mm-hmm. like, you know, go find someone else to massage, weirdo. She just like jumps onto the other side of the couch and just like immediately snuggles up against Rudy, because basically if she can choose between us and Rudy, she'll pick Rudy 10 times out of 10, which is like they have some kind of bond. At least Olive is bonded to Rudy in a way that she is not bonded to us.
Mm-hmm.
I say the circle of negging because, as I've talked about a lot on the show, it's like Olive is obsessed with Rudy, and Rudy could kind of take or leave Olive. Rudy is obsessed with us, and we could kind of take or leave Rudy sometimes. And then we're obsessed with the cat, who could kind of take or leave us. So everyone's always looking towards some other life form in this house who kind of is like, leave me alone right now. And we're like, no, but just love me. And that just goes in a circle.
Probably a good balance, actually. You don't want, you know, you need to have some sort of tension and mystery in a relationship. That relationship is very much like Professor Bananas and Theo, our current pet. Like, Theo's a grumpy old cat we've had forever. He follows me around. He, especially the older he gets, like in the past year or so, he is just, all he wants all the time is to be on my lap. And he's getting used to Genevieve because he can't be on my lap all the time. And so they're kind of reaching a detente. But like Genevieve says, she has never seen an animal bond with a human the way Theo is so bonded to me. And Professor Bananas is bonded to Theo in that way. And Theo's always kind of like, oh, whatever, you can clean me or whatever. And they spend so much time with, you know, she'll crawl up on the couch and then get closer and closer to him, or sometimes just like full on jump on top of him and start licking. But like, one way or the other, she is going to be snuggling with that cat, and he'll kind of put up with it after a while, when all he wants to be is on my lap, and I'll put up with that once in a while.
You love it. Don't try to pretend like you're putting up with it.
With Theo? No, I do love it, but I don't do – I can't have – because he's a big cat, and he wants to like be snuggled. He wants to be what I call thunder-shirted. You know how you can get those thunder shirts for dogs and you put them on? They're kind of tight, and it gives them a sense of security during times of anxiety. Well, that's what Theo wants from me. He wants to like kind of crawl up and then like kind of put his head on my shoulder and his paws on my shoulder, and I just kind of give him big hugs, and he really likes those big hugs. But they're – you know, I can't do that and play my video games at the same time, dude. Like, you know, so I mean, I'll do that for a little bit, then I'll put him down, and then he'll just wander around the house crying and crying because he's not being petted. And it got to the point where we thought, like, is there something wrong with him? Is he in pain? He's crying so much. But you pick him up and you squeeze him, and he doesn't ever act like he's in pain. He just wants attention all the time, mostly from me.
You know, I think I've thought about my childhood and my parents telling us that we couldn't have pets because we lived in a rental, It's like a lot of things, I think, when you grow up and you look back on your childhood, so many of the things that you took as just gospel, really they just come down to like what your parents were and weren't into, like foods you ate or didn't eat. Like for me, a lot of it was because, oh, my mom didn't like that kind of food, whatever it was. And I think, look, whoever owned our house, we lived in this same rental house for a long time. I want to say 15 years or something of my life. There was like we could have had a dog there. I mean, we had human children the landlords didn't know about, let alone like pets. Like that, you know what I mean? My dad put in like multiple non-code approved bedrooms in the basement. Literally, would just like build walls. It was like when they find one of those houses that's like has like undocumented people. They're like, how are 50 people in that house? Oh, they built a warren of illegal rooms in the basement. It was like that was our house growing up.
By the way,
just like
really quickly, I know you read that Melissa McCarthy, piece. What
piece
is the word I'm looking
New
for
Times
in
Magazine.
The New York Times? Yeah, by Taffy Burdessa Eckner. And we were talking about it yesterday. I thought of you because Melissa McCarthy was talking about how like. Everybody now wants to build their houses and tear down walls or buy houses
God,
and
right?
tear down the walls. And she thinks it's kind of partially just out of convenience so that everybody's in the same room at the same time and you don't have to walk from one room to another. And she says there's going to be a backlash. She's like, I want to start a company where we just build walls. We rebuild walls in people's houses when they realize, am I getting that basically right? Isn't that what she said?
Yeah. She's like the only person in the current culture who's basically pushing back on the open concept idea.
Right, and she thinks there's going
like,
to be a backlash.
Your house just feels like a studio apartment eventually,
yes.
The world's biggest studio apartment, because you've taken out all of the walls. I can kind of see what she's saying. I may change my opinion in 10 years. I am very much drinking the Kool-Aid on the whole open concept thing, and I like that very much about our house, and I think I'll stay with that as an idea. But, you know, she might not be totally wrong about it may be a trend, who knows? And I've joked about that too. Like, I wrote some lame tweet on Twitter when I was really deep in my HGTV watching phase, where I was talking about there was a point where most houses, all the rooms had walls and they were separate rooms. And if the people who put all those walls up could see just how out of fashion what their creation was now. Just how, like, the first thing that happens on any HGTV show when you walk into a room is, like, how many of these walls can we take down and how fast can we do it? They would be devastated to see their life's work was, you know, now completely and totally being destroyed. My parents were...
Oh, can I just ask one quick follow-up question to that? Because you might know this. I was talking with some folks about... whatever. I was standing in somebody's house a few weeks ago, and they were talking about when it was built, and somebody... quickly, just as an aside, threw out this comment about like, oh, so it was built before television. And it got me thinking, although I've been meaning to kind of look it up. Do they discuss on those shows how the invention of television changed American architecture? Because it must have, right? Yeah. Like, because you now have this central thing in the house that people probably started building around, at least conceptually.
Maybe, but I mean, the radio was that for a long time.
That's true,
too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my mom is just old enough to remember, like, they not having a TV and that they would listen to the radio. So I kind of feel like whether it was the hearth, whether it was the fireplace, I feel like the idea of gathering around in a room, like the living room or whatever, I kind of feel like that's almost a caveman thing with the fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably always existed, but I haven't read anything on that, and I might be totally wrong, and maybe that did really change how we thought about houses. But I was going to say, like, my long-winded point in that is that we were not getting pets because of anything having to do with the landlords. They were not, like, it was not a situation where the landlord was ever at the house. I can't remember anyone ever checking up on us. We weren't getting pets because it sounded like a hassle to my mom. And I think I've kind of subtly resented that throughout my life, because I just think it's, you know, I love our pets so much now, and I feel like it would have been really fun for me or my sisters to have had a dog that we, like, got to play with and were bonded to. But here's where I'm going with this. I also never, as a young kid, had to confront a pet dying. And that would have been really a bummer. So even though I don't think my parents were consciously trying to protect us from that, I guess a kind of silver lining for me was I didn't have to, like, at age 9 or 10 deal with a pet that I really loved being put down or dying in some kind of fashion. So I guess there's that.
Well, let me ask you this. I won't cast any aspersions, but answer honestly. Thinking about, you know, your parents' situation, a lot of kids, not a lot of space, not a lot of money. To bring in, you know, an animal, especially a dog, obviously brings in a lot of chaos. Like Genevieve and I talk about, we love dogs. We talk about getting a future dog all the time. But even us, two people here living in the city in an apartment, we just don't feel like we can give the dog its best life, or that we would be responsible enough necessarily at this point in our life. Like, do you think that you and your sisters would have really stepped up and taken care of the dog and done all of the kind of hard work of being a dog owner? Because if not, like, that really could have been a real drain on your parents who were already stretched pretty thin.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a good point. Like, I look back selfishly, I'm like, why wouldn't they let us have a pet? Just because they didn't want to deal with it. But it's like they were not – they didn't have an overabundance of time, energy, money, any of the things that you need. Like Carrie and I, it's just a total luxury. We don't have any little kids. We basically have nothing better to do with our time than obsess over the pets. That was mm-hmm. not my parents' situation. And it was probably the better decision, honestly, for them just to be like – I mean, we did raise my sister Hannah as a beagle for the first 6 years of her life. So we, you know, we would leash her and you know, walk her around and stuff. And she's still dealing with a lot of the fallout from not knowing she was a human child until age six.
Is that why she freaks out when I use my clicker?
If you pick up a rolled newspaper around her, you will see the fear in her eyes. No, you're right. Like, me saying that I resent my parents over us not getting pets is not really accounting for their experience, which was like every day of their life must have been like, how the bleep are we going to get through the next 24 hours?
Yeah.
Like, they were not like, hey, what can we do to create more chaos in this situation? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't blame them.
Let's take everything we have now and then add a big, wet, hairy dog running in from the lake and shaking out in the kitchen.
Like, this is all we can do to keep these small humans alive.
Yeah, right.
Let's add something else that we have to worry about that's not even a human thing.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it here. This is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Actually, you know what? On tomorrow's edition of this pet, should I just call it a pettacular? Have we retired that nomenclature?
Oh, wow. Let's see. Is it? It's not petageddon. What are the other cliches?
It's not pedagogy. I don't think I even know what pedagogy means. It's something to do with education, right?
I thought it had to do with lineage. Hold on. Let me look it up. Let's see here.
The method and practice of teaching, especially an academic subject or theoretical concept, the relationship between applied linguistics and language pedagogy.
Pedagogy.
You're right. It has to do with education. But I do think, can we name this episode Petagogy?
Yes.
Okay, good. What were you going to say we're going to do tomorrow then?
So tomorrow, even though I was just complaining about not having pets, that's not totally true because I basically forced the issue with my parents and did once bring home a hamster from class.
Uh-huh.
That was like, the teacher said, anyone want this hamster? And I was like, this is classic, you know, Luke Burbank behavior. I was like, well, if I show up at home with the hamster in a cage, it's going to really paint my parents into a corner. And mm-hmm. it did. So I did have a hamster. And I know you had a hamster. So tomorrow's edition of pedagogy talk is going to be focused on hamsters. So I don't know. Look forward to that. I guess I decided to forward promote tomorrow's show as a way of ending today's show.
I think we should. I like that. I love forward promos. All right. That sounds good. Now, did you have another song off that list? I don't have it in front of me anymore, but I know we were both looking at this kind of corny list of songs based on people's pets.
Well, there was a Queen. Elvis had a song.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Of course, he didn't write it because he was Elvis, but somebody else wrote it about their pet, a German Shepherd. Do you want to go out with that one?
Yeah, do you remember the name of it? I remember seeing it.
It's Old Shep is the name
Old
of the song
Shep,
by Elvis.
Right, thank you. Okay.
I'll tell you the details on this. Country singer Red Foley wrote the song in 1933 about his childhood German Shepherd, Hoover, who was poisoned by a neighbor. Boy, this gets darker than I expected it to. He recorded the song several times, but the classic country song was also recorded by other musicians, including Elvis Presley. So this Old Shep is a song about Red Foley's dog.
Can we play the Red Foley version or Johnny Cash did a version of it? I hate to – I mean, we can play the Elvis version, but I'll bet you – based on the description, don't you think the Red Foley version would be better?
I do. Red Foley is the one who lived it. It was his lived experience.
All right. So let's do it. I got it right. I got it dialed up right here.
Here's a little Red Foley for you on a Wednesday. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be right back here tomorrow with more pet talk. So we hope to see you then. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. Oh, I just realized, Andrew, I forgot the donors of the day. Can I do that real quick?
Oh, yeah, we should do it. Well, I'll keep this music going.
I think these people would have wanted to be having their thank you read over Red Foley's work.
I'm sure of it.
Didn't they get hip with that? Julie Huffman of Oxnard, California. Lloyd Inoue of Auburn, Washington. Jane Johnson of Everett, Washington. Robin Laughlin Eron of Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And April Love of Denver, Colorado. Julie, Lloyd, Jane, Robin, and April, thank you so much for donating during the TBTL-a-thon. Thanks for making recurring donations. Thank you for making TBTL possible. We would not be here doing this pet show that was mostly about appliance repair and whatever else we talked about.
Generational relations.
Underappreciation.
Yeah.
Or whatever. The negging of the millennials. None of that would have happened. And wouldn't that be a loss for America? None of that would have happened if not for Julie, Lloyd, Jane, and Robin, and also April. So thanks, guys, for supporting TBTL. We really do appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Now Old Shep is gone where the good doggies go, and no more with Old Shep will I roam. But if dogs have a heaven, there's one thing I know. Old Shep has a wonderful home.
Well, that about killed me.
Power out.